I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. It's time for our weekly visit to the barber shop, where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for our shape-up this week are freelance writer Jimmy Israel, civil rights attorney and author Arsalan Iftikhar, blogger and Johns Hopkins political science professor Lester Spence, and Sports Illustrated reporter Pablo Torre. Take it away, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. Hey, fellas. What's good? Welcome to the shop.
Hey,
what's up?
All right, well, you know what? It's been a rough couple of weeks for the Congressional Black Caucus, also known as the CBC. Now there's concern that the group, which calls itself, quote, the conscience of the conquerors, may not be living up to that slogan. Now, two of its more prominent members are at the center of ethics allegations, and a third member and former chair lost her seat in Tuesday's Michigan primaries, Michelle.
You know, we talked about the ethics issues earlier in the week, so people can perhaps refer to that conversation for the full details. But just to recap, in case you didn't hear it, of course, New York Congressman Charlie Rangel, longtime member, former chairman of the Ways and Means Committee, he was slapped with 13 ethics charges late last month. Of course, he says he's going to fight those. Congresswoman Maxine Waters of California, she's also a former CBC chair. She's been criticized for her involvement with a bank that received stimulus funds where her husband was on the board. The formal charges haven't been made clear, but she says she is fighting those. And as you alluded to, Michigan Congresswoman, former CBC chair Carolyn Cheeks Kilpatrick lost her primary on Tuesday. We just talked, actually, to the man who defeated her, State Senator Hanson Clark. And here's a short clip from her concession speech Wednesday morning. Here it is.
We did not win the election. I will be a servant and continue to do that. There were six candidates in this race. Unfortunately, they made it two. And that's okay.
Wow.
Yeah, she sounded sad. She sounded sad.
Yeah, really. You can hear it in her voice. Mm-hmm. Thanks for that, Michelle. Lester Spence, the good doctor. Dr. Poli Sci up in this piece. Break it down for us, please.
Yeah, I think that, well, I think it's important to understand that the three cases are very different. So Rangel.
How so?
Rangel's had a long history of potential violations. It's not clear that Representative Waters actually has an ethics violation as much as she tried to do a lot of work for black banks when the economy failed and she ran into problems there. And then in Carolyn Cheeks Kilpatrick's case, she was booted out of office largely because of her son. So it's important in talking about these cases, recognizing that there are three distinct cases, but yet and still we can use this as an opportunity to talk about the ways that the Congressional Black Caucus can come closer to becoming the moral voice of America that it used to be when it was conceived.
Well, is the real issue, though, Lester, and I totally take your point, but one of the issues that's emerged here is the fact that there are eight formal investigations before the House Ethics Committee, and all of them, the eight formal investigations all involved African Americans. And then some people say, well, what's the problem here? And some people say, well, that these people, that there's, is there a problem with their conduct, or is there a problem with the fact that they are African American politicians are subjected to an additional layer of scrutiny that sort of I would be curious about your take on that.
I think using Rangel as the best case, as the best worst case, I think is probably both. That is, African Americans are probably more likely to be subject to scrutiny, but at the same time, they have a higher standard, not only because they're black as far as how the outsiders look at them, they also represent constituencies that are often the hardest hit by problems that we have. So yeah, they are likely subject to differential treatment because they're black, but they have to step their game up.
And this is Pablo just jumping in. There is a commonality, though, that I thought was interesting. I think there are a couple of variables here, and it's not just race. It's also the fact that if you look at these lawmakers under investigation, the eight basically average 10 terms a person each. And these are really super entrenched. They were super entrenched incumbents that haven't really been threatened or checked because of the hold they had over their constituency. So I think it's not just race. It's also the idea that you have a bunch of people who maybe haven't had the accountability that you might expect from a lawmaker, and people who've been in power for so long that, you know, that you want maybe a change just because they've been there for such a long time.
It's interesting. Gene Robinson of the Washington Post wrote a column saying that Rangel, saying strongly defending Rangel on ethics grounds, saying that if he had a crime, it was that he has a large ego.
Right.
But that's not against – if that were a crime, then the jails would have to be much larger.
Well, I was actually going to – this is Arslan.
Go ahead, A-Train.
I was going to actually quote Gene Robinson of the Washington Post and former barbershop compatriot of ours in saying that in Rangel's case, he was, quote, not – he was trying to satisfy his ego, not line his pockets. Mm-hmm. You know, I think what's interesting also to keep in mind, piggybacking off something that Pablo just said, is that, you know, this, if you look, you know, before this recent group of cases that we've seen, you know, we've predominantly seen white politicians getting caught up in these sorts of ethics wrangles. You know, we had obviously former GOP majority leader and Dancing with the Stars reject Tom DeLay, you know, who was cast under a cloud for a very long time on ethics charges. And then, of course, on the Senate side, we have Senator John Ensign, the Republican from Nevada, who not only is facing ethics violations in terms of financial dealings, but also, you know, using those financial dealings to pay for an alleged mistress that he had. And so I don't think that this is as much an issue about race as it is about political hubris. Like, you know, Pablo said, a lot of these congressional leaders have been entrenched for many, many terms and decades. And so, you know, like Gene Robinson said, you know, I think that this is more about hubris than actual, you know, ethical, you know, criminal conduct.
Speaking of hubris. Hip-hop superstar Wyclef Jean.
That's so cold. That's wrong. That's cold.
He's been a living fusing melodies and hooks to make chart-topping hits, and nobody can take that away from him. But yesterday, he announced his latest endeavor, and he wants to become Haiti's next president. Really?
Yeah, I know. He was on CNN last. Well, excuse me. Who was? Did we not have a former actor as president of this country, the United States? I'm just saying.
Well, I mean, but he also.
Do we not have a former actor as governor of the largest state in the United States? I'm just saying.
But they'd also held other offices.
No, they didn't. Arnold Schwarzenegger didn't, and his first political office was as governor.
Look at how Arnold stumbled. Of a state
whose economy is larger than that of many countries.
Arnold needed whole army of advisors so he didn't fall on his face. You know, Arnold isn't the best case for Wyclef Jean running for Haiti president.
Do you want to hear what Wyclef had to say?
Sure,
he was on CNN.
Absolutely.
Would you like to hear it? Okay, here it is.
After January 12th, I would say over 50% of the population is a youth population, and we suffered for over 200 years. Now that our country has toppled, it's a chance to rebuild from the bottom on up. And I don't even say I'm trying to be president. I'm being drafted by the youth of Haiti. Right now is a chance for us to bring real education into the school, infrastructure, for security, and proper jobs. So this is some of the reasons that I'm running.
Wow.
I would vote for him.
No. It's like he has Sharptonitis. You know, that disease where you're in the limelight for like a minute, so you think that, you know, even though you haven't been dog catcher, you could suddenly be king of the world, right? Give me a break. Pablo, is this a good thing for Haiti and for Wyclef?
Well, first off, I think if the youth were drafting people in America, Justin Bieber would be president at this point. So I don't think that's necessarily proof of anything. But I do think, I mean, as long as this isn't a vanity project for Wyclef, as long as this isn't something to feed his ego, just jumping off of something we just talked about.
If he
sort of said really interestingly, you know, I'm not a politician. I'm going to delegate to people who know what they're doing. My question, what I would want to know is who are those people? Who are the people actually going to be making decisions? If he's going to be the marketing arm for Haiti, which could be a great idea to be an outside voice, someone who's from the United States, which people there, as the Miami Herald reported, actually respect and see as a good thing to have an outsider. If that all works out and he's the face, if he's the figurehead and he has people who know what they're doing running the government, then I think this could be a great experiment, actually, in a place that really needs an experiment to go right.
Well, you know, I was piggybacking off what Pablo said. I think it would be great. You know, honestly, if California, the seventh largest economy in the world, could elect a kindergarten cop to run its, executive branch, I think that, you know, for me, what it helps in doing is it'll never take Haiti off the map again. You know, let's not forget also that, you know, Haiti, politically speaking, had to deal with Papa Doc Duvalier, the strongman, mm-hmm. you know, who led Haiti for many, many years. And essentially, after the earthquake, Haiti sort of fell off the radar internationally. And I think by electing Wyclef Jean, you know, I'm not just saying this because the Fugees are my favorite hip-hop group ever. you know, I think that, you know, it'll never be outside of the international consciousness, the zeitgeist, you know, that we've seen after many natural disasters. And I think that, you know, it really could be that, you know, that change and new generation that Haiti's looking for.
Dr. Spence, can we have a voice of reason?
Of reason?
Here, please?
California is a failed state. When Ronald Reagan took control of the government in the 1980s, he created the path that led to our current economic crisis. Promoting straight up failed government policy, that government was the actual enemy. As soon as you hear someone say, I'm not a politician, but I want to run for office, you should be really, really scared. Because
right.
Haiti's problems are the primary cause of failed politics. So what we actually need is someone who can be really explicit about what these politics are and really explicit about using domestic and international politics to make Haiti a better space. Now, to the extent that that Wyclef can actually create that conversation is a good thing, but there's no way in hell, excuse my language, that we should have a hip-hop star running a failed state.
Well, I think that your analysis of California's problems is a little simplified. I don't think it's one political leader. I think it's a mismatch between it's all kinds of issues with governance here. It's an initiative and referendum system
right.
that doesn't really
good
allow
point.
People to govern.
Mm-hmm.
It's people allow their pet projects to be on the ballot and
Prop 8.
So that's kind
right.
of the issue here that political leaders can't really govern there. That's the issue. I don't think it's Ronald Reagan per se. He may have articulated a philosophy that made it attractive to, but anyway, we'll see. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. We're having our weekly visit to the barbershop with Jimmy Israel, Arsalan Iftikhar, Pablo Torre, and political science professor Lester Spence. Back to you, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. So the next topic, it's a little disturbing, at least, you know, for some of us. And it's every father's nightmare. So actor Lawrence Fishburne, you may recognize that name. He was Morpheus from The Matrix, and he's the current star of the CBS drama CSI. Well, he has a daughter that's trying to break into acting, but she's making her debut in porn.
You know, and this is not, and I just have to emphasize, this isn't some leaked sex tape here. This is, and I think one of the reasons we found this interesting is that it isn't often that people say that this is really what they want to do. I mean, they're not pretending that
right.
this is sort of
right.
a mistake. We actually found a clip of an interview with Fishburne's daughter, whose real name is Montana. She's using the screen name Chippy D, and she's on the celebrity blog CarltonJordan.com.
First time is really nerve-wracking. I mean, you're on camera, but I have a lot of at-home experience pretty much, so I feel really comfortable with the camera. The camera loves me. I love the camera.
So, Jimmy, I just have to... So, just to... If it was a little hard to hear, just saying...
Well...
She felt very comfortable with this, and I just have to ask, you know... On the one hand, you know, you are a father. On the other hand, you
right.
kind of have tend to have a very First Amendment attitude around entertainment and so forth. I don't
sure
know
indeed.
What's your take on this.
Well, you know what? Not for nothing. I mean, I have friends in the adult industry, and it is not easy money. So beyond being a father's nightmare on one level for the whole world to see your, you know, your daughter's naughty parts, you know, it's a tough gig. It's a tough business, you know. But here's me. I want Lawrence to come out and support his daughter, because you know what? You're not going to like all your kids' choices. I mean, you know that from jump. I mean, the minute that, you know, that they start telling you no, which is like, you know, not long after, you know, that's like the second word, you know, in life. It's like no. Then you know that you're not going to like all your kids' choices. You know, and if she ever needed a father, she needs a father right about now. So, you know, you got to respect your
kids'
choices.
But isn't a father's job in part to right. to exert his own values? And if he doesn't agree with it, what should
well,
he do?
I mean,
you're saying he should...
Well,
what should he do?
Well, I'm sure he didn't co-sign this. But what are you going to do? I mean, of course, it's your job as a father. You know what you want to instill in your children what your values are. But you know, all of us find our own way. I mean, very few of us went the way that our parents pushed us. You know, so I think right now I think she needs her dad, and I hope he comes out. And he doesn't have to buy a copy or wear a T-shirt, but you know, he needs to let the world know that he loves his daughter.
Well, that's an interesting point. Lester, you're a father also. I'm interested in your take on this. I think for a lot of people, this pushes a lot of buttons because here Lawrence Fishburne's worked so hard to be well-respected as an actor and leading in his field. And this kind of over-sexualization of black women is exactly what a lot of people really hate about Hollywood. And to have somebody say, well, actually, this is my gig, I think it's painful for some people. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I agree. I think it is Fishburne's responsibility to be there for his daughter. But the one thing that was really that really troubled me is a comment she said. She said that she was impatient with becoming well known. Mm. You know, she didn't talk about developing a craft, becoming an actor. What she wanted to do was be famous. And there's something that's really problematic about that. So the one thing I try to do as a father is I try to give my kids the ability to make informed choices. And I try to show them through my own work ethic how there's a whole bunch of things that you have to work really, really hard for. To the extent that what she's doing here is cutting corners. Not only cutting corners, but cutting this specific corner,
right.
I think that is really deeply problematic. Mm-hmm. And to that extent, I think what this signals is that there are conversations that Fishburne didn't have with her and he should have.
That's a tough one. Well, we're almost out of time, but we have to talk about the big sports news of the week. Arsalan, the Shaq in green pants. What's up? Shaquille O'Neal
is on the Boston Celtics. He signed a 2-year, $3 million deal for the veterans minimum at $1.5 million a year.
Happy?
I'm thrilled. You know, I'm just wondering, you know, is he going to change his name from the Big Diesel to, you know, the Big Leprechaun, the Big Chowder, you know? And what's most important, the funny thing is that Glenn Big Baby Davis, who's on the team already, his original nickname was Baby Shaq. So now you have Shaq and Baby Shaq on the same
team. That's cute. That's cute. Pablo, what do you think? Is this a plus for the Celtics?
You know, the Celtics need to do something to keep up with the Miami Heat. They need to try something. Again, it's their own experiment. I don't think, again, I'm not a Boston supporter like Arsalan is, but, you know, they got to do something. Got to try something. Maybe they hit a home run with a Shaq who suddenly decides to lose weight and get in shape again.
Oh, dear. Oh, my God. Ouch. Ouch. Okay, so, Pablo, Brett Favre, play or not play?
He's going to play, and he'll be around for as long as people hate him for. So if you want him to go away, stop talking about him, stop hating him. It only feeds into him. He's like the poltergeist of sports.
Okay, I think that's all that time we have today. Jimmy, thanks, everybody. Jimmy Israel was with us. Pablo Torre, Arsalan Iftikhar, and Lester Spence. Thanks, everybody.
Peace.
Thanks. Yep.
And that's our program for today. Our technical director is Kimberly Jones. Our theme music was composed by Underdog Entertainment with additional arrangements by Ian Honeyman. The supervising senior producer is Tashima Walker. I'm Michelle Martin, and you've been listening to Tell Me More from NPR News and the African American Public Radio Consortium. Let's talk more on Monday.